always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this? And we're live. Welcome, everybody, here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, senior Lakers insider as well as lead Lakers content creator for Offside, joined on this fine Thursday afternoon by you guys. I was going to go live a little bit earlier because I figured at some point we would get some dominoes falling as the Lakers attempt to open up some spending power and bring on their wings. I don't want to wait anymore because Jen has a 3-day weekend and we're getting close to dinner time. And so I'm just going to go live now. And then if we get any kind of breaking news, I'll pop back on here and react to it. So today on the show, we're going to be talking about the Lakers' attempts to open up that money and their potential targets there. We will debate between Rui Hachimura and Jonathan Kuminga. We will discuss a name who I can't stop really thinking about in terms of how perfect he would fit on this roster as it is currently constructed, that being LeBron. And then I'll answer your guys' questions. And one of the topics that I want to hit at various points a few times over was, you know, is this team better? Like, are the Lakers as a basketball team any better or worse than they were last year? I keep landing on that they are worse, but I am, and like, I say that right now, depending on which wing they add or some final moves that they make here before everything is settled, or you know, as we wrap up the rest of the offseason. At that point, we would revisit the conversation, obviously. But right now, I'm really nervous about this roster, and I'm hoping that you guys can talk me off the ledge. So hit me with comments, hit me with questions, hit me with topics, and I will get to as many of those as I can over the course of the show. So without any further ado, we will dive on in. After a quick reminder to please hit that like button, please hit that subscribe button. Please turn on notifications for the channel and for YouTube so you get the notifications for the channel. If you guys are listening to the show in its podcast form, please subscribe wherever it is that you get those podcasts. And yeah, until the next time, wow, I was just ending the show. Yeah, I am tired. Let's go ahead and dive on in. All right, so we start with this roster. And I think as it stands right now, the starters would be Austin, Grimes, Luka, Mamu, and obviously Kessler. That team, good rebounding team, not very good as far as foot speed. But be really concerned about point of attack defense and perimeter containment, defensively. And then, you know, coming off of the bench, you have Colin Sexton as your lead guard off of the bench. You would have Jake LaRavia coming off of your bench. You would have Adu Thero and Cam Carr coming off of the bench. And you would have DeAndre Ayton coming off of the bench as a backup center. And now, obviously, this could change. You technically have Jared Vanderbilt, but I'm pretty sure he's not going to be on the team next year. So that group, that roster, is it better or worse than it was last year? I think it fits better. I think you're like the natural roles that various guys can play. I think they make more sense for each player individually. And I think that's probably a good way of looking at this offseason or discussing this offseason. Every move within a vacuum you can explain. This is kind of a through line of all of Rob Pelinka's tenure, where you say, okay, we're looking for a stretch five who can, you know, continue with the, you know, like can compound advantages that like Luka and Austin create. We want to be able to play five out, even if it means those minutes we're going to be down pretty bad defensively. But like, you know, like who is the best stretch five realistically available on the market? And Mamu is pretty close to one of them. So you say like, yeah, in a vacuum makes a bunch of sense. In a vacuum, you're like, all right, we got it. You know, we're looking for a center who is an anchor defensively, who is a big body, who's not going to be moved by the Jokic's and the Wemby's and, all of these other front courts around the league. You want this player to have good touch around the rim, ideally, and you want this player to be able to finish lobs from up above the rim. As far as like options who check as many of those boxes as possible, Walker Kessler makes a bunch of sense. And if you would have told me like mid-season that the Lakers traded for Kessler and it costs a couple of first round picks, I'd be like, that seems to track, right? Hopefully the Lakers at that point would have more picks to be able to move, but like that seems to track. That seems to make more sense. So in a vacuum, that's a perfectly fine decision. If you're trying to figure out like, all right, the two spot has to be a good catch and shoot threat who can also, you know, attack a little bit off of the dribble depending, you know, because of the closeouts that are created by the creativity that Luka has and that Austin has. All right. Like Quentin Grimes, you could do worse than Quentin Grimes in that role. Makes a bunch of sense. Now, 4 years, $15 million per year, as we like deal with the, you know, like it's just tough to see the Lakers give out these four-year deals when they have spent 3 years trying to get rid of Jared Vanderbilt's 4-year contract. But regardless, you know, that's a little tough. That seems like a bit of an overpay for Quentin Grimes, but whatever. In a vacuum, it's mostly fine. But when you bring it all together, you know, and you're like, all right, well, we've already added Quentin Grimes to the group. Do we really need to add an offense first small guard? Probably not, in my opinion. Not when Kelly Oubre is signing for just slightly less than you signed Colin Sexton for. So, like, this is what's always kind of bothered me about the way that Rob Pelinka does things, is it's never like a cohesive roster that he throws together. It's never like forward thinking. There's no consistent through line as far as like the team's identity and the style of basketball that he wants the Lakers to play. It's always just kind of like a series of decent value moves and then you kind of carry it out from there. And like it would be like going to like what Jen and I will do every so often is on a day where I can go to the grocery store and just kind of pick out stuff for dinner. She'll just be like, all right, I'll tell her, all right, give me the protein. Tell me what protein you want me to get, whether it's beef or pork or fish or chicken or whatever, or poultry or whatever. And I will build out a meal from there. And if she says, all right, I want fish. All right, I'll go get some salmon and I'll show up and be like, dang, crab is cheap today. All right, I'm going to get a little crab. Wow, scallops, also really cheap. Huh, that's kind of interesting. I'll get some scallops. And then I'll look over. Huh, look at that. Pork is really cheap. Maybe I'll do a pork loin or whatever it is. And then I walk away and I'm leaving and I make a meal and Jen's like, why is it all protein? You know, it's like individually some seared scallops, some lemon pepper seared scallops sounds good. Some crispy skin salmon also sounds amazing. Some, you know, some steamed crab with, you know, with some cocktail sauce off to the side. That sounds good too. Some pork loin with like a mushroom pepper sauce dribbled over the top of it also sounds amazing. But altogether, you're like, wait, where's the vegetable? Where's the starch? It's not, it's just too much of the one thing. And the Lakers doubled and tripled and quadrupled down on offense and shooting and spacing and stuff like that. And it's what happens when that's how your president of basketball operations sees things. He's a former shooting guard. He is always going to lean offense. It's what happens when your head coach is a former shooting guard who always thinks about the game through the prism of offense first. And it's what happens when your superstar sees the game that way too, right? Everything is just, it's this, it's everything is doubling and tripling and quadrupling down on the same, you know, desires of those decision makers. And at no point did anybody seem to be like, hey guys, could we buy a potato? Could we cook up some rice? How about a risotto? Like, can we do anything that gives us any kind of defense? This is the worst defense of all the contenders. Like, by a lot. And we just watched a final series between the Spurs and the Knicks where those teams were absolutely bludgeoning each other defensively. The Lakers would show up for that series and would not be able to get a stop, you know? So I don't know. We'll see how it turns out. We'll see what other moves are coming and we will see to what extent Luka, Austin and Grimes kind of commit to playing defense, you know, maybe, you know, with the way that this roster is put together, maybe JJ Redick like convinces those guys, hey, the only way that we have any chance whatsoever of being a decent playoff team is by, you know, really committing to competing on the defensive side. Maybe the power of friendship helps you out there, but I just don't see the defensive talent on the perimeter here. And they're basically banking on Walker Kessler, like what they used to do with Anthony Davis. They're doing it all over again, where it's like, all right, we employ an elite defensive center. This guy can just make up for all the mistakes. And, I think it's too much to ask against some of these high octane offenses that some of these teams have. So that's how I feel about this team. I think they are better offensively. Though I do wish they had LeBron still. I think they're better offensively. I think they fit a little bit better piece to piece offensively, but the defense is just so far below the bar of where a modern defense needs to be if you're a title contender, that and there's no like outside of trading Austin when you can move his contract, there's no path to you know acquiring impact defenders. I am very nervous about that defense in the postseason, even though I still believe this team is probably like I just did a radio hit with a betting show. And they asked me about the wins total right now sits at like 45.5. I would very confidently, if I know everybody's going to be relatively healthy, I would very confidently bet the over on 45.5 wins on this Lakers team. I think Luka by himself is good for 50 wins or whatever. I think on a night by night basis, teams aren't going to be able to defend the Lakers. They're going to be very difficult to defend. So, and as such, I think the Lakers are going to score enough that they would be able to rip off 50 wins in their sleep this season. I think they'll pretty easily win their division. Even though I'm a little nervous about Phoenix, I think they're going to be pretty good, but I'm not nervous at all about Golden State. I'm not nervous at all about the Clippers. Sacramento is always going to suck. So I think the Lakers are going to win their division, and I think they're probably going to get home court in the first round of the playoffs this year. But like after that, that's where I start to get a little nervous. And then you say like, well, you know, maybe, you know, this will be a year that they kind of build on and they look to improve next year. It's like, how? Outside of Cam Carr taking a giant leap in year two, or outside of Duke Thiero taking two giant leaps in years two and three, and staying healthy, outside of that, or, you know, trading Austin and one of those guys to bring in the player who they need at that contract figure, like, it's just, I'm really nervous about the lack of flexibility in building out this roster from here. Now we'll see which forward it is. And I think that's a good place to kind of jump off of there and discuss which forward we would prefer, with a quick kind of rehash of what the Lakers are trying to do. So the Lakers right now are very aware of the fact that they don't have a starting power forward. I think they view Grimes, Austin, and Luka as their starting, you know, perimeter, the backcourt. So you have your, you know, and then I guess in that instance, you would have like Luka as the starting small forward. And then from there, the Lakers are kind of debating between, I think, Rui Hachimura and Jonathan Kuminga, depending on the number that they would be able to get those guys at. The case for Rui is continuity. He is an absolute laser. So you would be, you know, banking on him spacing the floor from the four spot. Whenever LeBron wasn't available, Rui started at the four and often looked really, really good. So I think offensively, it makes a whole bunch of sense. Not a good defender, or not like a pot. I think he's like a, maybe like a neutral defender overall, but not the rebounder that the Lakers would maybe like him to be. And so like, it's kind of like with Rui, it's like, you know, the behind door number one is an entity that you know, an entity that you're comfortable with. You can just, it's like, you know, in my house, we always have spaghetti. I'm hungry, which is why we have all these food analogies. But in my house, we always have the stuff to make spaghetti. And on any given night when we're like, all right, what do you want to do? I don't know. What do you want to do? I don't know. I don't really want to go out. We don't really have much to cook here. What do you think? And I'll be like, I could whip up some spaghetti, you know, and it's great. It winds up being good. Kids love daddy spaghetti. It's their favorite meal. So they're pumped. Jen and I are like, this is perfectly fine. And it's like that's Rui. Rui is, you know, whipping together some spaghetti when there isn't anything else in the pantry or in the fridge. Right. Kuminga is like a complete wild card, you know, as far as like just raw talent. Kuminga is the significantly more intriguing basketball player to me than Rui Hachimura. The concern I have about Jonathan Kuminga is that he's on the Cam Reddish trajectory, where he is unquestionably talented. Absolutely talented basketball player. He got to Atlanta last year. His first game had everybody saying like, geez, what did the Warriors just do? And then the longer that, you know, Atlanta spent around Jonathan Kuminga, they arrive at the offseason and they're like, yeah, see what other offers you can get. We're not really, they had a team option on him that they could have just picked up. It would have been perfectly fine. So they're like with Jonathan Kuminga and Rui Hachimura, with Kuminga, you're like gambling on him realizing, damn, look what direction my career is going in. You know, the Warriors got so sick of me, they traded me for Kristaps Porzingis and the worst immune system in the NBA. And then I get to Atlanta and I'm like okay there. And this young athletic team that is looking to build by way of youth athleticism and organic growth was like, we're good. Go see if you can get your $17 million that you were going to make from us elsewhere. And maybe he gets to the Lakers, and maybe, you know, by looking around at how his career has played out to this point, he realizes that, all right, I need to buy into doing 3-and-D wing things, and that is how I'll maximize my earnings from here on out. But oftentimes, as we saw with Cam Reddish, he's just like he shows up and he beats a couple of guys one-on-one before practice starts, and nobody is taking it particularly seriously. And he plays well in October and November, and everybody's like, damn, look at this guy. And then the games start getting more serious, and there's more video you know, that teams can utilize to prep for Jonathan Kuminga. And all of a sudden, steadily, his game gets worse and worse and worse and worse, you know? And it's like, you know, I for me, I'm perfectly fine serving up a little spaghetti. Whereas like with Jonathan Kuminga, you look in the fridge and there's some like leftover sopita, and there's like, you know, some eggs in there. And, you know, like, look, every so often, I remember one time, you know, Jim was like, hey, what do you want to do for dinner? And I kind of looked around and I had just watched a video on how to make lemon garlic butter pasta. And I was like, well, I could try this. We have a little fresh basil that I could throw on top of there too. Sometimes you look in there and you find the right meal and you're like, damn, that turned out great. And maybe that's how this turns out with Jonathan Kuminga. But then there are other times where you're like, I wish we would have done spaghetti. You know, actually my kids ate that pasta and they're like, daddy, can we do spaghetti next time? And my youngest didn't even eat it. So I don't know. I understand the amount of confidence in Jonathan Kuminga has. He's young. He's athletic. He is unquestionably talented, but I just really fear that he's a loser. I really fear that this dude just doesn't get what it takes to, you know, help a team win basketball games, what it takes to be a part of a positive culture. And those guys great on entire teams. And even though I think Kuminga is the more talented basketball player, if I had to choose just between those two players, I would probably just go with Rui. Give me that daddy sketty. All right. Let's go ahead. Yes, it is a food analogy, Michael. Get used to it. I give them a lot of them. You guys can see I am very good at eating. And I'm pretty good at cooking. So, there's a lot of food analogies on this here platform. Let's go ahead and, you know what? I'm going to start doing a Q&A early. So I'm going to go up here and just see if we have any. We do have super comments. We have several super comments. So I'm going to go ahead and dive on into your super comments, starting with the most important sound on the show. Fuck Washington! Actually, that reminds me, we have to just collectively laugh at the Boston Celtics. So wherever you are, just go ahead, go for a little stretch, inhale. Right? Like these guys went from, oh, we're definitely getting Giannis, Paul George at 36. They got less picks for Jaylen Brown than it took to sign or than it took to acquire Walker Kessler. Like, that is amazing. That was my favorite. Like, no matter how frustrated I have been over the Lakers offseason, and look, like, there are enough of really, like, smart basketball people. I listened to LFR yesterday, and Darius and Pete are really high on this offseason for the Lakers. And that's fine. Like, I can't wait to talk to Pete about it tomorrow. So, like, between their optimism, their positivity, and the fact that so many Boston fans, so many Celtics fans are so upset. Honestly, not a bad offseason. So it's been like that. That's been fun, you know, like watching Bill Simmons. Apparently he was getting, that rectal scan or whatever, a colonoscopy. He was like in the middle of a colonoscopy when the trade went down, and like he woke up to that. That's amazing, right? Also, the Clippers, you know what? That's a good point. That is a great point here from where is it? From Bashir. Play the Laughing Clippers clip, because it actually works out with the Clippers too, because Paul George is in that Clippers clip. The Clippers just traded away Kawhi Leonard. Like, honestly, good call. Let's just laugh for a little bit.
Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast.
Board.
It was wide open. I can't even make sense.
Lou Williams, he said they just came together this year, as if that was an excuse, like the other team in the conference finals didn't do that.
Well, what happened was, it doesn't even matter.
You know, we didn't have time to get it together, you know? Like, we just...
Did he say that with like lemon pepper wings in his mouth? Is that what happened there?
He's licking it off his
fingers. Like, oh man, there were some absences that cost us some time.
I just can't quite figure
out. Picking it out of his teeth.
Why we don't have any chemistry.
It's like, Lou, in your mic'd up segment, you said 1, 2, 3, Magic City, leaving the last huddle.
All right, we're going to keep this thing going. Let's take a quick second. And to be clear.
They didn't even make the Western Conference. After all that.
To this day, the thing I'm proudest of is just Harrison, Pete, and myself just being complete idiots laughing at the Clippers, who, remember, that was the year they had a 3-1 lead in the bubble, and they couldn't advance to the Western Conference Finals. And, Paul George shoots that shot off the side of the backboard. Just amazing. One of the funniest days in the history of Twitter. All right, let's go ahead with that kind of behind us. We will go ahead and, dive on into your guys' questions and comments and topics and all that good stuff. All right, we start at the top here of the super comments, and we, where is it? All right, so the first one, Brandon Omang writes, LA should try to offload DK, Jake, and Vando to the Mavs for PJ Washington's. That way we open up about $5 million to try and sign someone else. The vet men's I'd target are Okai, Matisse Thybulle, and Richards. Which one's Richards? And then try to keep Timmy and Magnon on their two ways, or as their two ways. I really like, especially if they trade DeAndre Ayton. Because right now they don't have any picks that they could, utilize. They have a pick swap, that they could, I guess, use. But outside of that, in terms of drafts, stuff, they don't really have much to be able to offer. So what you then have to offer is like playable players, right? And young players who teams might be interested in. Taking a gamble on, and cap flexibility with expiring contracts, and so Lakers have some of that, right? DeAndre Ayton, it checks a couple of those boxes, and that he is still a starting caliber center, and he's on a very reasonable contract, and that contract is up at after this year. So some team, you know, might consider him like a neutral or slightly plus or slightly positive asset, which, you know, you combine that with like a Dalton Connect, who's a former first round pick, another unquestionably talented basketball player who doesn't quite have his head on straight. But still, some team might say, oh, if we fix him, that's a great buy low candidate. So you combine Ayton and Connect and maybe like a pick swap. And maybe that convinces some team to take on Jared Vanderbilt's contract. Maybe you get a player back who's like on a contract that they don't love either, and it works out for both sides. But regardless, that's what the Lakers were essentially trying to do. Is they're trying to find a taker for Vanderbilt's contract. They're trying to take a taker or find a taker for Dalton Connect's contract, and they're trying to open up enough space, enough cap space, enough spending power to be able to bring in one of Rui Hachimura, Jonathan Kuminga, or, you know, one of these other guys. And then after they figured this part out, then they dive into the veteran minimum players. I like Akbaji. Like, if I had to choose between the names listed here, Okai Akbaji is somebody who I really would like to take a gamble on. Matisse Thybulle somewhat too, though I've heard some questions about whether or not he's like even that interested in, you know, making continuing to play basketball at a very high level, or if he just kind of wants to go to a team and be a positive influence, which is also valuable. You know, I just think that like we've already seen JJ not want to play Jared Vanderbilt, and I don't think he would be all that interested in playing Matisse Thybulle. Richards, I still don't even know who Richards. Oh, Nick Richards. Nick Richards would be interesting if one of the if you trade Ayton, you know, you bring in Richards, and he's another like lob threat, big body, who I think would make some sense for the Lakers. But I also don't hate the idea of bringing back DeAndre Ayton if he buys into the backup center role and you know, fully commits to being, you know, and like him going on or going taking on second units, and I would imagine in those groups he would be playing a lot with like Austin, and Austin and he had good chemistry last year. So like I actually don't hate the idea of DeAndre Ayton. I would have the reason you know, in yesterday's show I saw somebody really disagreed with me saying I would have preferred to keep Hayes instead of Ayton. The reason I said that is because he's a different pitch that the Lakers could throw from the center spot, meaning Hayes is like this rim running, way above the rim type athlete who Luka tends to make look a lot better, whereas Ayton is a lot more plodding, a lot more methodical, a lot more skilled, and a lot bigger. But Ayton is kind of an extension of Kessler, whereas Hayes is a different type of player that you could throw there. And I like the idea of having different pitches with different centers. So like Mamu is a very different center from Ayton, who would be a very Mamu is a very different center from Kessler, who would be a very different center from Hayes. Whereas like Mamu is a very different center from Kessler, who is a very similar center to Ayton. And that flexibility isn't quite as presented there, but you're talking about a backup center there. And like DeAndre Ayton being your backup center means you're really good at the center spot. To be like completely honest, you would be like the Lakers would be set from the center spot there. So I don't hate it if the Lakers would prefer to hold on to Ayton. And also it might make more sense for Ayton to stick around with the Lakers to try to get bird rights. Like that's basically what all of these guys are going to do, whether it's Ayton, whether it's Rui, whether it's Kuminga, whether it's, you know, all of the guys that the Lakers just signed via free agency. Like they are trying to stick with the Lakers long enough to get bird rights. And then the Lakers are just going to get, they're going to scale up in terms of how much this team costs, and they'll eventually go above the first apron. Eventually they'll get right up against the second apron. And if they're good enough, ideally they would exceed the second apron to keep this group together. But if not, then you got to adjust it. But yeah, I love the idea of Akbaji as a buy low veteran minimum signing on the wing. I really liked him coming out of Kansas, looked really good as a rookie, hit the sophomore slump, like a mother bleeper, and I would love to try to buy low and see if you could fix them. So that would be my choice between the guys that you presented there. Thank you, Brandon. All right, the next question here comes from Drew Gallegos, who writes, would you be willing to move on from Carr if we could also include Vando, and Adu if we can include DK? I don't know, just giving ideas. No, I saw people kind of talking about the notion. I saw Sam Quinn, who is really good, you know, as far as like asset management. He and I tend to see pretty eye to eye on Twitter, but he was talking about like including a pick swap to offload Vando's contract. And to me, like, I would, of all of the paths that the Lakers can take right now, the one that I think appeals to me most is just to wave and stretch Vando and see how much flexibility you get that way. And the reason for it is because like this team, this roster is pretty much set, right? In terms of like, we know it's going to be this expensive for at least the next few years. And like, dead money doesn't really bother me that much. You know, when you're a team that is just going to continue scaling up in terms of costs, whereas this team doesn't have very many trade assets. And, you know, they have no tradable first rounders for the next, you know, 7 years or whatever the number is, unless it's like on draft day after you've made the draft pick for the other team. But, you know, as far as like, if I had to choose a path, and also like the reason I'm making that point is because like, if you don't have draft picks and you don't have rotation players that you're including in trades, then the next thing that you can kind of, and you don't have cap space that you're including in trades, then the next thing that you have to be able to consider including are younger guys like Adu Thero and Cam Carr. And so with them being one of the very few assets that the Lakers can include in some of these trades, especially as they start to come into their own as players. And I think Cam is a guy who I think is going to be fairly ready right away to help in interesting spots or in specific spots. Thero is somebody who like I really want to see get a lot more playing time this year. And I would like to see the Lakers as they build out their organization, right? As the Dodgerification continues and they build out their organization and they really focus on developing some of these guys, I would much rather keep those guys in my organization and then just, you know, eat whatever dead money from DK or from Vando that I have to. All right, my next question here comes from Mockman FI7RX, who writes, when are we changing the name to Snowtime? Love the show. Thank you very much. Yeah, I've seen Snowtime making the rounds. I joked that the Lakers jersey patch next year is going to be Abercrombie and Fitch. It's funny. I was talking to a source the other day, and I asked, like, hey, Rob is aware, right? Rob Pelinka is aware of all of these jokes about the number of white dudes that he continues to employ, right? And he's like, yeah, we've seen the memes. We've seen, you know, these white men are dangerous is a funny meme to him. And he's seen the Snowtime jokes and all of that. So the exciting whites meme, right, is another one that apparently Rob Pelinka is aware of. And I like, everybody has been really good at coming up with those jokes. I've found all of that really, really funny. I think it's like exponentially funnier that Rob Pelinka is aware of the jokes. It just makes me so happy that he is aware that these jokes are out there and that these jokes continue to get made, and that he continues to, yeah, I don't think it's like a conscious effort or anything like that to lean in, but they just keep on happening to find exciting whites. All right. Next question here comes from, I was scrolling by and all I see is like, Mr. Casino go carb talk. It's like, yeah. I love me some spaghetti, and my kids love them some daddy spaghetti. What can I say? Rouse spaghetti sauce is my favorite. You guys got to try that one. Let's see. The next question here comes from... Well, we have a member question from Kristen Lee, who writes, I want to be optimistic for my own happiness. Think of it this way. Look what Orlando paid for Bane. In reality, we should have had to give up 4 or 5 first-round picks for Luka. So it kind of evens out, you're saying? No, I mean, I kind of get it. I would prefer to just continue to come out ahead in stuff like that. And look, like, you're right that, or the people who have pointed this out are right, objectively correct in saying that the cost of a starting caliber, even all-star caliber center, is typically a couple of first-round picks. Look what Ivica Zubac went for when he got traded from the Clippers to the Pacers, right? And the Pacers wound up paying even more because that top five pick wound up conveying to the Clippers. It was such a bad draft trade that, remember, the Pacers GM apologized for it publicly. So, like, you know, in that sense, and Zubac is a lot more proven than Kessler, so that's worth pointing out as well. But still, like, for the Lakers, they really believe that Kessler is going to be one of those perennial all-star candidate centers. They think he's going to anchor their defense. They think he's going to stay healthier. They think he's going to continue to grow because he's younger. The price on Kessler makes sense if it's in a vacuum. The problem is that was all that the Lakers had to offer. That was all of their spending power. And usually in sign and trades, like, I would have much rather, to the point that I made a second ago, as far as, like, you know, how expensive a roster can get, I would have rather paid Walker Kessler a full max and not included any draft compensation, and at that point risked, you know, having him, you know, signing him to a deal in Utah not matching or Utah matching. So to me, that's what I would kind of have preferred to have happen, so that you could use that draft capital to then, you know, get the wing that the Lakers clearly need right now. And but, you know, because Rob Pelinka knew that his job was riding on whether or not he lands this specific center, given the amount of eggs that he had put into that basket, Utah just took advantage of the situation and asked for everything, which you normally don't see in sign and trade situations. So here we stand with that. But the one thing I will say, and I've seen other people mention it, and I think it's a good point to make, if you're going to include all of that stuff, if you're like the not just the first two, the two first round picks that the Lakers traded, those two unprotected first round picks that the Lakers traded, but on top of that, you're also trading pick swaps as well. If you're doing all of that and you're not including one of these contracts that you're trying to get rid of right now, like, Dalton Knecht should have been in the trade. He's an expiring contract. Like, we'll see what he gets used on or whatever, but clearly, like, he's this guy who teams want, like, a second round pick or just cash to take him on or whatever. Like, if that's what you eventually have to do in a separate transaction, I would have tried to include him at the very least. Even, like, the thinking here is that you're definitely not going to be able to include Jared Vanderbilt in the deal, which I would have preferred to do. But if not, then, like, why isn't Knecht in the deal? Like, if you're doing all of that, you got and you're basically putting all of your assets towards this one thing, you got to try to lump all of, like, those two transactions together in some way. And I thought it was pretty disappointing that the Lakers that Rob Pelinka wasn't able to negotiate his way out of that. Which, by the way, Rob is a negotiator. How are you an agent? Like, I guess your job was done for you because you were Kobe's agent. But you give away these player options like you're Oprah giving away cars. You know, apparently, if we're to believe the stories that are out there, which I don't fully necessarily, but still, if you're to believe the story that at least Austin's camp wants out there, Rob went from $30 to $46 million in a matter of 16 hours just because Detroit said maybe, just maybe, we would open up enough spending power to maybe give Austin his contract when they never actually did that. Like, that's really poor negotiating from Rob Pelinka, the super agent. You gave away everything to Utah when the negotiating power that you had was, all right, fine, don't sign and trade him to us. We'll just give you this offer, and your books are either going to be screwed or you're going to give this guy away for nothing. Your call. Didn't even do that. Like, his inability, the fact that, like, according to these reports, Rob never, like, contacted LeBron, and it pissed LeBron off enough that he didn't, and he felt so unwanted that he was just like, fine, I'm out of here then. Like, I don't know. There's a communication. There's an ability to communicate there from Rob that just really falls short of what you need at that, you know, in that job role or that position. And it's just, it keeps on biting the Lakers that he can't do it, unless it's Nico. And Nico is hell bent on doing something really, really stupid. All right. Let's see. The next question here comes from, here we go. Siskel 2831, your opinion, if the front office plans to groom Adu and Carr fully into our defensive stoppers in a 2-year plan while waiting to trade Vando, oh, and Dalton's next year. So you're asking if, like, that, look, the Lakers are very aware of the fact that they need young guys to be productive on their rookie contracts because of how expensive the rest of the roster is. So they drafted a guy like Cam Carr, who's a little older and a little more NBA ready right now. They have Adu Thiro, who they have high hopes for in his ability to, like, he is a Thiro, that is, has like a grown man body already, and he has grown man NBA athleticism, and the Lakers are hoping that that translates into helping this year. Now they're going to do whatever work that they have to do to also, you know, sign their starting power forward for this upcoming season. But the hope is that, like, the young guys that they have on their team take real steps forward over the course of the season, and certainly over the course of the next couple of seasons, and that those guys can become legit rotation players while they're on their rookie deals, to help kind of supplement the more expensive pieces that the Lakers have. And the other thing too is, if those guys pop, if those guys become, you know, legit rotation players, and they're young and they're on their rookie deals, well, then they become legit trade pieces too. So that's what the Lakers are hoping to get from those guys. That's why I would be shocked if those guys were included. No, maybe not shocked. I would say surprised if Adu Thiro or Cam Carr were included in some of these trades. And, you know, I think the plan here is to try to open up that space by way of, you know, either sending cash along with Dalton Connect, and then stretching. Like, if you send, like, the Lakers still technically have, we'll say, $8 million in cash that they could spend this year. We'll even say, yeah, no, $8 million in cash that they could spend this year. I think it's like 8.5. And if you basically send the amount of money that, like, so Dalton makes, I think, about $5 million this year, because of his rookie deal. So if you send $5 million bucks and Dalton to some team that has enough cap space to be able to do that, that opens up that much cap space. And then on top of that, if you wave and stretch Jared Vanderbilt, who I think is making just shy of $15 million this year. So you wave and stretch him, that opens up 10 mil or so in cap space on its own, plus Dalton's five. That allows you to go to, you know, Kuminga or Rui and offer $15 million a year. Like, maybe that gives you a shot at those guys. And that's how you, like, that's what I that's how I think going to play out. That's how I think the Lakers would prefer to see this play out. Also, and, you know, another possibility is, if you trade, like, Bronny to some team and you send a little bit of cash with Bronny wherever, you know, LeBron signs, you send a little cash with Bronny And don't take a player back, that opens up another $2 million or so. So then you're sitting at like 15 to 16, maybe $17 million in cap space that you could possibly spend on this wing. But then after that, you're completely out of cap space. You don't really have very many trade assets right now. And so what you have to hope happens, and what the Lakers are hoping happens here, is that Cam Carr, Duke Thiero, those guys pop and become legit, rotation wings for the Lakers. And then now you have a lot more flexibility, but those are things that happen over time. And if they don't happen, then man, that's the part of this that makes me the most nervous. That every time I think to myself, like, man, but what if this doesn't happen? What if that doesn't, what if Walker gets hurt? What if the what ifs in this scare me so much, because the Lakers just have zero else to offer. They have nothing else that they can offer right now. And it just absolutely terrifies me that there is basically no practical way of pivoting if this plan doesn't pan out. All right. The next question that we have here comes from Matthew the Sicilian, who writes, Bill Simmons finding out about the Brown trade coming off of anesthesia from a colonoscopy is one of the funniest things ever. He admitted it was karma for shitting on Snowtime. I got to give him credit, because I legit thought that he would spend, in an effort to not think about the Jaylen Brown trade, I thought he was just going to shit on, just spend the whole show talking about what the Lakers did. And then at the very end, be like, all right, fine, I guess we got to talk about this now. But I give him credit. He understood what the audience was there for. And he, told a really funny story about it. And I also give him credit in that, I've seen other reporters from Boston, not all of them, I'm not going to paint with a broad brush here, but I've seen other reporters from Boston who have been like, I can't wait to see what that pick looks like coming from, Philadelphia when Embiid is older and this and that. And it's like, no, man. Or like my personal favorite has been this whole, bit of reporting where they're like, oh, at no point did Jaylen Brown demand a trade or even request a trade. And it's like, oh yeah, so they just did that out of the goodness of their heart. Like, what do you stop it? You know, it's the same shit that you get from, or that you had gotten before in Milwaukee, where it was like, hey, really, Giannis never requested a trade. Okay, yeah, so they just felt like trading him to Miami. And he just happened to get traded to Miami, one of the teams that he reported, one of the few teams he reportedly was getting ready to sign or would sign an extension with. And come on, we aren't stupid. People aren't stupid. It's like, I hate it when, and this is, I'm a part of this. I'm a part of the media too. And I always try to catch myself if I find myself doing this, but I hate it when members of the media see a situation that everybody can see with their own two eyes and then try to convince everybody that it isn't that thing without anything better than sources say. It's like, no, either Brad Stevens has to go directly on the record and say this definitively. It's like a way worse version of this is what Colin Cowherd did the other day or yesterday or today, whenever it came out, where he was like, I've had executives say that Jaylen Brown, just has this, I think he called it a disease, saying that Jaylen Brown always has to be the smartest person in the room, or always feels like he's the smartest person in the room. And it's like, I've had people tell me wild shit on and off the record, wild shit. I don't repeat all of it. And oftentimes I'll push back and I'll be like, yo, what do you want me to do with that? I can't do anything with that. How do you expect me to take this? Also, don't say problematic shit. Colin Cowherd hears that from because the implication there in the Jaylen Brown thing is that, like, apparently, and you got to know who you're saying this about, but apparently basketball players, and specifically Black basketball players, can only be so smart. And if they exceed that intelligence level, then now all of a sudden they become disease ridden. No, man, you can't do that. And so, like, in these efforts to, like, support the, you know, or even present nuance to a situation that clearly doesn't need nuance here, Boston fucked up by leaking that they, you know, that they had put Jaylen Brown on the table for Giannis, and they didn't have a plan B after that information got out, because typically they were so used to being so protected so frequently that they were forced into a spot where they had to trade Jaylen Brown at an extreme deficit of leverage, and they didn't want to go into next season or even longer into this offseason with that hanging over the franchise. And that put themselves in a spot where they had to trade him for not even pennies, pesos on the dollar. Like, not like there was, it was an absolutely brutal trade. And anybody who isn't willing to say that is carrying water, just flat out. And I really appreciated that Bill Simmons, like, went on a show and said, this was stupid. All of this was really stupid. It was completely avoidable. And it makes me wonder what else could possibly be going on here. And that kind of, that, like, that to me, say what you will about Simmons, and I have plenty to say about Simmons normally, but that was a perfectly fine response to this. And it's, I mean, it's a lot of the same shit that I would have said if the Lakers had done something as stupid as that, which, you know, I didn't like this offseason, so you've heard me talk about it. All right. The next question here comes from John Sotelo, 8652. Speaking of offseason moves, I see that Pete joined the Lakers collective. Is he no longer a part of the Hook? Also, when will we see Larsul again? I'm going to talk to Aaron about coming on the show here once the Lakers roster is officially, meaning like they, you know, send out the emails, send out the tweets, send out the press releases, and the Lakers offseason is officially done. So he and I will talk about the offseason. We'll talk about the roster at that point. And then as far as Pete with the Hook, the plan is for him to continue on. I don't see why that would change anything. And I want to continue on with the Great Western Forum. So I don't really see why anything has to change there. You just never know. Like, this time of year, as much as, like, we're all focused on what these teams are getting ready to do for us in this industry, this is also the time where we lay out our workload for next season and you know, fill it to the extent that we can without it becoming unhealthy. Like, I don't know, you guys saw Jason Timpf, who used to be on the Lakers collective. You know, he said that he was literally becoming unhealthy because of how much time he was spending on the air. Those are things that we have to weigh. I have a family, so I'm always very careful about how much I put on my plate. I've probably cost myself plenty of money with that approach, but we all weigh what we can and cannot do and the time that we're willing to spend on stuff. And we'll see what all of us are able to figure out this upcoming offseason once, you know, our actual jobs are taken care of for last season. All right, next question here comes from Matthew the Sicilian. Is Brad Stevens in the same boat as Nico, meaning that trade was horrible, trying to spend Derek White had a better season than Brown? Really? So I don't know if that aspect of the leaking came from Brad Stevens, the whole, like, Derek White thing. Derek White is analytically more impactful than Jaylen Brown. And this is one of those spots where I truly believe there is value in analytics, right? All it is just information. That's it. It's statistics. It's the statistical information. That's it. Anybody who, like, uses analytics as a pejorative oftentimes sounds stupid. However, I think the same can be said about the people who too religiously hold on to the catch-all analytics, right? And like the LeBron and VORP and like used to be PER, right? The people who too religiously follow those analytics, like that is where you can get yourself into trouble. And what you have to find a way to do is use that information to whatever extent you can, but also understand its shortcomings. It's like I've always had kind of a saying, and I know I didn't come up with it, but there's a saying out there, there's a cliche out there, which is something to the extent of the smartest people you know are aware of what they don't know. This like that self understanding, that self awareness of, yeah, I think I'm a fairly smart dude, but I also know that there are aspects of everything that I don't know. And like, how curious are you, and how to what extent are you willing to put in the work to become as educated as you can possibly be on whatever that subject might be? And I think sometimes there's a lack of creativity in analytically driven people. And that lack of curiosity, lack of creativity can sometimes lead people to the conclusion of Jaylen Brown was the seventh most valuable Celtic last year. And it's like, no, man, come on. Obviously, that's not true. So, like, as far as like, you know, did White have a better season than Jaylen Brown last year? I don't think he did. Statistically, he is more impactful, but I don't think, like, if you basically asked Derek White to do everything for the Celtics that Jaylen Brown was doing for them, I don't think the Celtics would have been as good as they were with Jaylen Brown doing that stuff. And like, that to me is like all you need to know about that subject. Now, as far as is Brad Stevens in the same boat as Nico, I would be shocked if this cost Brad Stevens his job. He's done a fantastic job to this point. The Celtics are probably going to be really good again next season. They aren't going to be as good in the postseason as they were last year. And they're probably going to lose Paul George for like 30 games, whether it's for suspension or for injury. But like, end of the day, you know, I this isn't a, like, the big crime here was the Celtics allowing it to get out that Jaylen Brown was the centerpiece of a Giannis trade. That's it. All of the other issues stemmed from there. And once they found themselves behind the eight ball, they decided to rip off the Band-Aid and trade Jaylen Brown. And I would like to eventually get more reporting on what led them to the decision that they needed to do it now. Because like, one thing that I was thinking about while all of that was going on was like, look, the Lakers at one point were staring down the barrel of Kobe Bryant telling them, I want to play on any other professional team in the world. I'll play on fucking Pluto. Like, that entire situation was so toxic that it just, everybody thought, remember Kobe, the first game of the season that year, Lakers fans were booing Kobe, booing him. It was the opening introductions. Google it. I got to figure out like what year it is or whatever, but, and maybe when I do, but like I'll play it for you guys on the show. But Lakers fans were booing Kobe Bryant in that first game at the beginning of it. And then by the end of the game, because Kobe was Kobe, they were chanting MVP for him. And the reason that Kobe remained, it was 07. Thank you, Bloodhand. The reason that Kobe remained a Laker throughout all of that is because Dr. Buss was such a badass that he went to Kobe, took him out for lunch, and said, look, man, you asked us to trade you. We fielded offers. This is what we got. And the one offer that we were even somewhat interested in, you vetoed because you wanted to play with Luol Deng. And I'm sorry, you might want to go to a situation where you're going to win a championship right away, but that doesn't mean anything to us. Our responsibility is to our franchise and to our fans. And what is best for us is for you to try to move past this, and for all of us to try to move past this and get through this together. And eventually, the way it all happened, remember, Andrew Bynum was the guy that Kobe wanted shipped out for, I think, Jason Kidd. And he was pissed. And I think Kevin Garnett as well, one of those two. Well, either of those two Kobe would have taken. But, well, the Lakers were willing to trade for Garnett. They had Bynum on the table for Garnett. Boston, because Danny Ainge did, or Kevin McHale did, Danny Ainge a favor there, did him a solid. Boston, you know, sent Al Jefferson over, and Andrew Bynum remained with the Lakers. But when it was when it was Jason Kidd, actually, that's a great point, Chris Shadout. That's a really funny hypothetical. Mark Walters should buy low on Brad Stevens right now. That'd be baller. But anyway, like the Jason or what Jim Buss or Jerry Buss did was like, hey, Kobe, we can't trade you. We're gonna try to just get through this together. Let's just see what this team looks like going, you know, as the season rolls along. And Andrew Bynum took a leap, right? Took a leap. He became a completely different player. He was just an animal. He was incredible. And I'll never forget it. The Lakers had played the Seattle Supersonics one night, and Bynum went off for like, you know, 25 and 18 or whatever the numbers would actually were. And they asked Kobe afterward. The Lakers had the best record in the West pretty deep into the season. And they like, hey, how do you feel? Cause they kept asking him over the course of the offseason about this trade demand. And they kept asking him, well, what do you think now? What do you think now? What do you think now? And finally, after Bynum has that game, the Lakers win that game. It was their whatever, however many wins in a row that they had racked up. And they asked Kobe, well, what do you think? And he was like, where would I go? You're watching this. Look at what that kid just did over there. And it was just such a weight off of everybody's shoulders. And I'm not saying that this definitely would have played out that way, but at the very least, you could have gotten more than Paul George's old ass and a fake first rounder and one first rounder for him. And that's where I think Boston really kind of screwed the pooch here. It was just like, man, you got to try to have a conversation with him. You got to try to get him on the same page with you and try to, you know, have him be patient. Have you guys be patient, get more for him than that trade package. And at least like further into the offseason, like maybe they thought this was going to fester and get even worse, or maybe they thought that Jaylen Brown wouldn't even play for them next year. But to me, this was just such a clear example of Boston operating at their lowest point of leverage, and it really cost them, you know, and that was fun to watch. All right. That is going to do it here for this episode of the Lakers Lounge podcast. Like I said, if we get any more breaking news or anything like that, I'll hop back on here. I'll record an offside video or something like that. The plan is to record an episode of The Hook tomorrow. And then, you know, allow that to kind of take us off into the 4th of July weekend. So until then, please hit that like button. Please hit that subscribe button. Please turn on notifications for the show and for YouTube. And then subscribe wherever it is that you get your podcast. Preferably Odyssey. Anywhere is fine with me. Use that promo code HMA and get $50 worth of free lineups on Prize Picks. When you sign up, use that promo code and make a $5 lineup of your own. And until the next time you guys hear from me, have a great rest of your evening. Make somebody else's, and I'll talk to you guys soon.